Well, good morning, Ken. It's a blustery autumn day here in Wivy. You've been on the road for nearly 14 months now, then it's another chance to speak with you back in China.
Hi, John. And Anton, of course, in the background.
Ken, I've followed the piece-to-camera video clips on the Vimeo channel that appear on your website closely since late August. And the main impression that I've had recently is of the continual hard riding and conditions you're facing. Can you tell us a bit more about what you're experiencing on the road at the moment?
Both physically and psychologically, the deserts of Western China have been particularly tough. Not just the heat, sometimes up into the 40s, but at times gale force winds strong enough to blow the bike over, making conditions simply unrideable, and also great expanses of nothingness to contend with. Further east, beyond the city of Lanzhou, conditions have eased, terraced hillsides replacing barren rock and scant vegetation of the desert. But still some challenging climbs, though. A few days ago, up at close on 8,000 feet. And there's still quite a few mountains between here and Hong Kong.
Yeah, I guess it must be pretty hard on you, Ken, but also pretty hard on your bike. Now, we know from frequent interviews in the blog and so on that you affectionately call your bike Emma. But tell us how Emma is standing up to these difficult conditions. And also, I mean, bits will wear out and so on. How do you get new supplies for kit that wears out on Emma that you can't carry with you the whole time?
Emma's done remarkably well. A few punctures, a worn chain, all things you'd realistically expect. In fact, fair to say, she's proved to be a bit more robust than yours truly. Of course, she was designed and built to take a pounding, so in a way I'd be a bit disappointed if this wasn't the case. That doesn't mean that she isn't partial to a spot of TLC, the odd tweak here, drop of oil, but all pretty routine stuff. I do carry quite a few spares, everything from tires and inner tubes to bearings and brake pads, and a pretty comprehensive toolkit. You'd be forgiven for thinking that you might be able to easily source a lot of these items in a country like China, a nation of cyclists after all, but that's not exactly true. So far at least, you'd struggle, and definitely no bike shops in the Gobi Desert. I think I'm sticking with being as self-supporting as possible.
It's interesting that you mention the Gobi Desert, Ken, because I was intrigued by one of your blogs, which, like many people, I read avidly when they appear, when you were talking about the deserts in China. Now, we know of the Gobi, and we spoke a little bit about that last month, but I gather there's another desert that you've been travelling through in China. And also, again, I've taken this from the blog, can you tell us more about this geographer's dilemma? Whether they count as one desert or whether they're two deserts, and where do you stand yourself on the viewpoint with this, having crossed both of them or one very big desert?
The other less well-known one is the Taklamakan Desert, separated from the Gobi by the Turpan and Hami basins, literally huge depressions in the ground, in the case of the Turpan, quite some way below sea level. Some cite the whole lot as being the Gobi, but I'm really just not convinced. There does appear to be quite a distinct separation between them. I've been through those mountains. But whichever way you look at it, it's a lot of sand.
Well, I guess once you've got through your awful lot of sand, Ken, you'll be arriving in Hong Kong pretty soon, and I imagine you'll be pretty pleased to get there as well. I wonder what it is you're looking forward most of all to enjoying once you arrive in Hong Kong, and what kind of activities have you got planned for yourself during your stay?
I think I'm most curious to see just how much of an English influence remains. I've quite a bit of experience of other former colonies and outposts of the Empire to draw on, Gibraltar, Tristan da Cunha, the Falkland Islands, and Bermuda, for example. And how different is it to mainland China, Hong Kong being, to all intents and purposes, still an independent state? I'm also very much hoping to visit Outward Bound Hong Kong, and although it's independent of the UK Trust, there are actually some very close links between the two. And Emma, my trusty CD, will no doubt be in need of a bit of a wash and brush up, which should keep me quiet for a while.
Well, I hope you both get a bit of rest and relaxation before the next stage. And I know the next continent for you is going to be Australasia. But what are your plans exactly? Because I guess you've got a couple of months between Hong Kong and arriving in Oz.
The plan is to fly direct from Hong Kong to Australia. Not actually an enviable choice, packing up a bicycle to give it a fighting chance of surviving the baggage mishandlers is always fraught with difficulty, but needs must. I've looked at riding south from China through the likes of Vietnam and Thailand, but time constraints really preclude this, especially if you want to actually experience these countries rather than simply sail through. For another time, I think. Besides, I feel very comfortable that in reaching Hong Kong, I will have definitely achieved my aim of cycling across Asia.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that, is there, Ken? I mean, it's quite remarkable, your trip so far. And especially when we think that you've been on the road for a year now. I'm very aware that quite often while you've been physically in one country, in your head, you've been planning to be in the next and perhaps the one after. How does this planning work exactly while you're on the road? And what kind of things do you have to plan in advance?
A never-ending juggling act, sorting out the next few days, perhaps weeks, whilst keeping a careful eye on the next country en route. I think visas are probably the most important thing. After all, without them, you're going absolutely nowhere. And it's usually a case of devil in the detail. Lots of pitfalls for the unwary. Of course, being a Westerner generally does help with entry, if only because you're usually not seen as a potential economic migrant tempted to remain illegally. Once I've got permission to enter a country, then it's really a matter of fleshing out the route, getting the maps, drawing up timelines, thinking about the daily distance, hours of daylight, where I might stop, logistics drops. None of it, of course, difficult in itself, and helped hugely by the internet, but it does take time. And I do get some help. Never, for example, concern myself with hunting for the best airline deal. Just sketch out the requirements for my parents and let them weave their research magic. Then go ahead and book exactly what they advise. 41, but never too old to learn from mum and dad.
Oh, well, there's a good lesson for our listeners this morning, Ken. Words of wisdom from China. Thank you very much. I mean, I guess you've had some pretty tough days in the last few months, Ken, but people do wonder how you are able to keep your resolve as strong as it seems to be from the blogs and the video pieces. What are your sort of tricks of the trade in this respect?
There's certainly been some moments, but it wouldn't be a challenge, would it, if it were easy? At least that's what I tell myself when I've not been wedded to a nice piece of Western ceramic. I think enough said on that. But three things I think really do help. A sense of humour. Always better to laugh than cry. An element of stoicism, remembering that the venture is really as much about problem solving as pushing the pedals. And finally, but perhaps most importantly, never losing sight of why you're doing it. Seeking to inspire others, raise funds for the Outward Bound Trust, and perhaps through the website, help others learn a little bit more about the places I've been privileged to be able to visit, sharing at least a flavour of my experiences.
And I think it's probably fair to say that this has been very successful so far, Ken, speaking to other people around here and in Taunton who follow your websites and so on. I think time is just about running out for us, Ken. Anton's posed with more music to play for the listeners. Would you like to do one final plug, as ever, for the website and also the organisation that you're promoting on this trip?
Certainly. You can follow my antics, subscribe to the blog, watch the videos, see the photos, even see exactly where I've been courtesy of GPS via my website www.acrosscontinents.org. You can also make a secure donation to the UK charity I'm seeking to raise at least £1 a mile for every mile cycled, the Outward Bound Trust, that does some really great work helping young people unlock their potential.
Okay, thanks very much for that then, Ken. So, as ever, best of wishes. Take care now and happy riding through the final bit of sand between you and Hong Kong, and speak to you very shortly in another month or so. Bye for now.
As ever, John, great to chat, and looking forward to doing the same again next month.